Well, I got everything I needed to know about outside security, home security. I mentioned the fact that I am incredibly unsecure, insecure. Maybe I'm insecure, too. I'm insecure and I'm unsecure at my house. But I'm also, and this is something you probably shouldn't say on something that's going to be digital, I'm also not very secure on my computer, but I just need to learn more about it. And the best part is I've spoken at several cybersecurity conferences, so it's not that I don't know or how to do it. I think I'm just like addicted to the risk of like, well, we'll see what happens here.
Wait a minute, wait, turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. He talking Scott Cartoon.
And so I figured, why not talk to a Chicago innovation guest? You are a Chicago innovation winner. Darren Guccione, co-founder of Keeper Security. It is one of the world's most popular password managers. And as always, we want to make sure to give our shout out to the Chicago Innovation Awards. They are one of the most important groups in Chicago. They have, I don't even know at this point, 600 awardees. Yeah, the total value is like $30 billion. They've had like less than 1% of the companies who have won this 10 years later are still like that are not in business. Like everyone who's won an award is still in business, which is just an insane, insane stat. So kudos to Tom Kaczmarski and the team over at Chicago Innovation. But about enough about them, Darren. I want to welcome you to our show and have you convince me to be more wise with my password protection, just my whole life. Like, how do I protect myself?
Yeah, so, I saw Tom, by the way, this morning. They came over, but yeah, it's good. So you're the majority, right? So most people use the same password for all their websites and applications. That's one of the reasons why we exist as a company.
I will say, I use a real password for my website stuff. For the business, that's business is a little different. But like everything else, I use the same password.
Yeah, so 80% of the time when there's a breach, it's a result of either weak passwords or poor password management practices that permeates whether you're a consumer or a business, works the same way. So if you look at all these breaches out there, whether it's Target, Equifax, Sony, it all results, you know, it stems from a password problem. So we attack the password as the main attack vector. The same way that a hacker looks at a password, we look at that's your core digital asset that you have to protect. So what our software does is it generates a high-strength random password for every single website and application that you use. It stores it in a ubiquitous digital vault that runs on your smartphone, tablet, computer. And so at the end of the day, you only have to remember one master password.
And then we
set up a biometric like your fingerprint or your face ID, which most devices today support that.
Yep.
And then you're in. That's it.
Very cool. Tell us a little bit, for those who don't know, what are hackers looking for? How do they, for the longest time, and this is scary because a person who spends a lot of time with tech companies, and I never wasted time to like learn how this works, but I'd always been on the assumption like they could guess your password or something like that. So it's like, what are the likelihood they're going to guess my password? But that's not how it all works. Like, how do hackers figure out people's passwords?
Well, here's what's interesting. They actually do know what your passwords are.
That's fantastic.
So, for example, we do a lot of thought leadership work, like a lot of research projects. So we analyze the top 10 million passwords that were breached, and they create a dictionary list. Hackers actually have a dictionary list of the top, let's say, 100 passwords that most people use.
They just run them.
Yeah, so when we looked at the top 100, the top 50 are used more than half the time.
So 1, 2, 3, 4.
That was actually the number two most
Spaceballs
common password.
Reference.
Well, number one was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Then 1, 2, 3, 4. Then password, right? If you look at, you know, breaches out there, we recently saw admin as a username and password combination. So they dictionary. And then number two, they fish. I'm not talking about F-I-S-H. Yeah. It's P-H, right? Like the rock band.
Yep.
So if you get a phishing email and you don't realize that you've received one and you click on it at work and you're logging into your Citibank account, it turns out not to be your Citibank account. The back end of that is controlled by a hacker. They've just grabbed your login credentials. Now, they're going to go on Facebook and all your social media networks and figure out what you like, where you hang out, and they're going to take and replicate those login credentials across all of the different websites and applications that they think you may use.
Yeah.
More than 60% of all people use the same password on multiple websites.
That's me.
Right. So when they breach one,
they got everything.
They're successful in breaching a multitude of sites.
And this is the funny part. As a person sitting here who's not stupid, but also not the smartest when it comes to this stuff, I will laugh and say, what kind of an idiot would use password or admin or something like that for something important? And yet, at the same time, I'm the idiot who uses whatever password I create for 15 different things. So I'm just as breachable as the idiot with the password admin combo.
It's not even like it's not idiocracy so much as it is just.
Well, it's actually laziness on my end. Like, I don't want to learn stuff.
We call it password fatigue.
Yes, yes.
So it's how do you, as a human, generate in your mind a high strength random password with letters, characters, numbers, and symbols. And have a different one of those for every single website. Yeah. It's not even humanly possible. Maybe like, you know, someone with a mega memory who's gifted can do that.
Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah. But, you know, unless you're, you know, autistic times, you know, a factor of 1,000, right, and you're a mathematical genius, most people like us, I mean, I fit in your category. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Right? So I like to do two things. I want to get to my website and get access really fast. And I do not want to have to think about fumbling around with passwords. So the benefit is if I did a time and I timed you and me with Keeper, right? I can fingerprint into my vault, tap my URL inside the vault for Amazon, and I'm instantly logged in, right? Whereas you're going a different route and you have to start manually typing in passwords. And
so you're still faster.
It's just faster. It's easier. So I don't use it necessarily just because it's secure. That is a given. It needs to be secure. I use it because it's fast, and I don't have to think about it. Right? I got 700 records in my vault. Right? Not just the passwords, but it stores everything.
Sure.
My credit and debit card images. Right? All of my frequent flyer information, wire instructions for bank accounts.
So how do you feel about like? Whether it's integration or what are your thoughts on like with Apple Pay and things like that? Like those of us who right now use apps and things, are the apps running through Keeper as well? Or is it something where you're like, you know, you're on your own with that?
No. So the applications use what we call, we have something called Keeper Fill.
Yep.
So it's a proprietary patented autofill system that we've created.
So when we go to Amazon's app, it kicks through your app, which then fills the details.
That's exactly right. So we know when we're looking at a login screen on whether it's an application or a mobile browser or a desktop browser, Keeper knows that.
Very cool. I think it's crazy to me and very important, and I'm telling this to everyone listening, but I'm also saying this to myself. We are entering a world where you just saw the stuff with Facebook and the profiles and the Cambridge Analytica or whatever
That's
the hell they're
crazy.
Called. Yeah, and it's insane, but like we're heading down, you know, of course I'm like the biggest promoter of tech, but at the same time, like, you know, be careful. Like, we're heading down a world where everything in our entire lives are digital. And back in the day, someone could steal your mail. And yes, there was definitely identity theft.
Yeah.
But it took a while. And it took a while to untangle, but it took a while for it to, like, become a thing. And then they run all your money down. This can happen overnight. You could literally go somewhere, have this ripped, and tomorrow morning wake up and you're broke.
That's
because
right.
Everything is digital. And they own everything in your life.
That's true. And the thing that people are starting to realize is that privacy's dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's dead.
It's gone.
Unless you have protection and you know what's out there, you know, like products like Keeper, any type of password management that's like zero knowledge, that's really important, by the way, is zero knowledge security, where only you can encrypt and decrypt your information, where there's no server-side encryption. Right, these traditional cloud storage providers that maintain encryption keys, it's really dangerous because if a hacker can steal the keys and they can steal the binaries, then they can, over time, decrypt the user's information, right? That's when you see, like, sensitive photos, you know, circulating the internet after, you know.
I just assume we could drink too much. Are you talking about the ones that were stolen?
Yeah, the one, you know, it's just... It's
not
just,
the ones that we freely posted.
Issue. Yeah, I mean, this is the problem. And so when you start saying like, okay, well, you think you're going on a site, you're answering a questionnaire, and someone says, well, are you going to, you know, there's no disclosure. Is it okay if I sell your information? Is it okay if, you know, this is not a zero-knowledge security architecture? They don't even get that far because most people don't even think twice about it, right? They think that because I'm in an application, I must be protected and secure. There's just this false sense of security because there's no cloak of armor anymore.
Yeah.
You have to find it, and you have to get educated on security, and you have to enable it.
I think it's interesting, and I also think it's one of those things, like you mentioned password fatigue. I just don't think we can afford to have it. Like, we're in a world where everything is password and digital. Like, you have
That's right.
to. So, like, yeah, I mean, I'm annoyed with all the password stuff, but at the same time, like, choose to be, you know, in the grid or don't, but you really don't get a choice. Because no matter what happens, like, if you bought anything, you use a credit card, you've ever used anything, even your Social Security, at birth, you're put into a digital bank.
That's right.
So there is no off-the-grid anymore, which is kind of scary.
No. Craziness. I agree with you.
How did you get this business off the ground, and where, like, just in general, like, how did you see, because this isn't a new thing, like, how did you see this thing coming before everybody else?
This was in 2008, so my partner and I were in a completely different business. I don't remember if CallPod, so we had this, you know, mobile devices business. We were, you know, designing and selling mobile device chargers, wireless headsets, like Bluetooth
yep.
products. And we were on this trip to China in 2008. The iPhone had come out. The first software development kit, you know, for Apple was released. And my partner was on the plane next to me tinkering around with the first SDK. And I looked over and I said, you know, what are you working on? He had like this little grid on the screen. He was like putting in some codes. I said, what are you storing in there? He's like, oh, I'm you know, creating this little app, just a test app called Keeper. And I said, well, what are you keeping in it? And he says, oh, some codes. And I started doing some research, and I said, wow, you know, there's really no ubiquitous digital vault for a smartphone. Anyone who's protecting any type of sensitive information is doing it on a computer or through a web browser, right?
Yeah.
On a 20-inch monitor. And I was thinking, wow, you know, if we could design just this ubiquitous digital vault for a smartphone, we could take a different approach and really proliferate this across any type of, you know, mobile device, tablet, computer. And so I saw this revolution about to happen with the App Store.
Yeah.
The App Store was about to come out. And I just said, Craig, we know software. You know, we built and sold our first software company in 18 months. It was Apollo Solutions. We sold it to CNET. And I said, let's do this. You know, so I started like drawing up screens on the plane. We, you know, we were flying to China. So it's like 20 hours.
Yeah. Whole thing was built by the time you landed.
It
and
was.
And you landed in a place where they had a lot of money or they wanted to buy it. You might as well sold it to them right off the plane.
Yeah. So we landed and the first version of Keeper was done. It was very raw, very simple. You know, we launched it as a free app on, you know, the App Store for Apple in 2009. It quickly started to gain some traction. And I said, Craig, I'll fund this business. Let's pivot, because CallPod was in trouble. So we decided to, you know, divest the manufacturing business. We changed CallPod into a wholly, you know, basically a holding company. We formed Keeper Security as a wholly owned subsidiary. And then really quietly began building and scaling this development team, you know, with a few designers. And in September 2010, we launched the business as a paid application. We sell it on annual recurring subscription.
Yep.
And the rest is history. And
That's
it's
awesome.
Been phenomenal. So the first 4.5 years of the company was, you know, all consumer. We've got, you know, about 13 million consumers on it and growing. And then about a year and a half ago, we launched our business product. So we sell into companies now. It's got several 1,000 business accounts, and we're just, you know, reinvesting. It's still a bootstrap company.
Yeah.
We've never looked back. We never raised any outside capital, and we reinvest, you know, consistently in the business and just keep growing. So it's been really fun.
Sounds like it. It actually leads to the next kind of conversation, which is the business side of this, because you mentioned at the start of the show the Equifax and things like that. And as we start to move into particularly in Chicago, the insurtech area, you're seeing people's data moving around faster, more than ever before. you see with like we're both wearing Apple Watches, the personal data on my, you know, health performance and things that we're now being able to send via text or other to our insurance providers to lower the premiums and things like that. How do we ensure, whether that's Keeper or just lobbying or whatever it is, how do we ensure that the companies that are going to be holding this content we're sending that is our data is protected?
This always bothers me. This is like the magical question.
Yeah.
You know, the things that companies and organizations have to realize is that, number one, they're fiduciaries of our information, and they're not doing a good enough job protecting the information. Not necessarily out of malice or intent.
That reads just like the indictment on Equifax, literally.
Well,
they treated our information as if it wasn't important, poorly insured everything.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Right. So if you go to a bank and you deposit, you know, $1 million in an account, you would hope that, you know, someone can't, like, you know, drill through the vault and steal all the money, right, and wipe you out.
You're right, though. That's a perfect analogy.
That is essentially the analogy.
People taking our money at a bank, throwing it in a bag, and leaving it out on the counter.
Right. So now we have companies like Equifax and many others taking personal identifiable information, our first name, last name, date of birth, social security number, residence address. If I steal that information from you, I can take out lines of credit without you knowing about
it. Not on me. Startup founder.
Right?
I ain't got none left.
Okay. People have bought property. People take out credit cards. People file your tax returns and take your refunds. You go to file your tax return. You're like, well, we already sent you your refund. No, you didn't. Right? That was like to the tune of over $50 million last year.
Last year, that was a huge story.
Right. So companies are fiduciaries, and they have a fiduciary responsibility to protect your personal identifiable information. So the question is, well, if I'm a company, how do I do that? Because the hackers are getting so smart, so sophisticated, and they're state-sponsored.
Yep.
Right? We see it. So how do you combat that? You know that the main attack vector is the password. So that's why, you know, in terms of like timing and proliferation of what needs to happen, the easiest way, and I'm not here to like sell our software.
No,
I'm just trying
this is
to
legitimate.
Educate.
This is so legitimate because you're hitting a point that I think the common listener doesn't get because this is more than an assumption. Speaking at cyber conference, these are the questions people asked us, and why they must ask me because they want to know like am I dummy proof because I do so little to protect myself. But the question that was asked was they assume they being the audience of people assume that these breaches are very sophisticated and that they, at the highest level spy, they broke into the system and they sucked it off a server. And the reality is the breach is as simple as somebody left the office unprotected, did it at home, and didn't use their password or hit, like you said, a phishing scam on their home email using at-work stuff. And like that, they're all the way into the top
of
Equifax.
It.
It's that,
that
simple.
That fast.
Yeah.
That fast and that mundane. It's, at the end of the day, you have to protect the main attack vector. You have to protect those passwords. They should be encrypted at rest, in transit. They should never be stored in plain text. I mean, there was a document right at a major public company that was called Passwords sitting on a server. It was there for the taking, right? And so, I mean, that's really what we're looking at is just like it's really straightforward. It's just about education, knowing that there is actually software out there that can help you. And that's really what needs to happen in these organizations because these systems are just so vulnerable. A lot of these systems are antiquated.
World.
I mean, there's people still on old Unix AS400 systems, right? They don't have adequate firewall protection. I mean, you saw that with the Office of Personnel Management. How many millions of fingerprints were stolen? Now, can you imagine if your password's stolen? Fine. You rotate your password and you're okay.
You can't change your fingers.
You cannot change your fingerprint. So what do?
Yeah, screw.
You got a problem.
Yeah.
So that this is what's happening. And every other week, someone else is in the press, right? I mean, every day, 30,000 sites on average get hacked.
Can you imagine the look on the hacker's face for like, I don't know that this is what happened, but let's assume for Equifax that it definitely did happen to the CIA. This was one of the breaches that happened somebody went home and was using private classified documents at home and it got, can you imagine the hacker who was just, you know, he was just hacking away. He was just trying to like, you know, get the home address of a couple people that he was, you know, flying. And then all of a sudden he opens it up and he's got access to the entire CIA or the entire Equifax system. Like he had to shit himself. Like I can't even imagine what that's like. It's just,
yeah. And you know, that information is worth so much money on the dark web. I mean, just whether it's the Target breach or the Equifax breach. I mean, any of these breaches.
Sony PlayStation was another one that was massive.
That's right. They're worth a fortune. The hacker organizations are making billions of dollars reselling your information over and over. You just go on the dark web and take a look. I don't know if you've ever taken a look at it, but you just go to the Tor browser and just take a look at what you can buy. It's astounding.
Yeah. I should definitely spend more time on the dark web.
That's wild.
It's been a while since I've been dark web surfing. Yeah. I need to do that again soon. This is amazing. Darren, it's not amazing that people are hacking stuff, but Keeper's amazing. Congratulations again on the Chicago Innovation Award and all the stuff that you guys continue to do. I actually have a meeting with Tom coming up in a couple weeks or so. We'll have to catch up. Darren, thanks so much for coming in here. Where do people go to download and or use Keeper Security?
Keepersecurity.com.
And you get it's still in the App Store and things like that?
Yeah, and also we have, you know, anyone listening to this show gets 50% off, and that's just Technori.
Awesome. All right, I'll make sure to promote that, guys. Make a note.
Yep.
Technori, save yourself 50%, including me. I might have to go use my Technori promo code on Keeper Security. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
You can catch this episode and more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes. Stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.